This episode was created with the support of Free FM, Hamilton, New Zealand's community access media organisation. Visit us at freefm.org.nz.
Welcome to Free Left Turn, a left-wing perspective, here on Free FM 89.0, independent community media. To my, I'll say my nominal left is Fred.
Oh, good morning. That's better.
I'll go with that nominal left.
Yeah, I like that.
Nominal.
Yeah. Mm. And in front of me is Mick.
Good morning, gentlemen.
He's also on my left.
Nominally. And me, I'm sitting somewhere in the centre. No, I'm not.
Right.
Yeah, it's been an interesting week politically.
Yes. Lots of bloody noses.
Yes. I think probably going to start with the main one was the NCEA, because I think there's a lot there. And you have got quite a bit of information on it, Fred.
Yeah, well, actually, and I recommend this guy, and I forgot who he wrote the article with, but if you look him up, and his name is, let me see what his name is now, Stuart Dearness, and he's a lecturer at the AUT, Auckland. Was it? Auckland University of Technology.
AUT.
But he's written a very good article today, and... And basically he's saying, well, and it was basically that the NCEA idea was really undermined by elite school, the elitism going on in schools, yep, et cetera. And in particular, he named, it's called the Cambridge Internal Education Option, and it's an offshoot from Cambridge University in the UK. And they say last year, I think there was 8,000 pupils doing exams under this system, all right? Mm-hmm. So, and of course, you've been able to opt out of the NZCEA for some time.
Mm.
NZCEA came in about 2004, 2005, long time. Mm. Yeah, it's been 20 years.
Yeah, approximately, yeah.
But, and I see that Auckland Grammar, I think, jumped out of 2011. And so his basic article is that by having this better other higher elite options, it's undermined the credibility of NZCEA, and then more schools who are advertising that they are better than other schools, you know, which is, I call it, education snobbery or elitism, which we see
the old school type.
So it's
a very good article, and I'll try and if you look it up on my Facebook page, Greg, when you
I'll make a reference to it.
Yeah. But it's very good. And just saying how that has weakened the whole NZCEA until they've come to this point.
So when I saw the ad, or not the ad, the article about it on TV One News, and the people that were referenced in there by Stanford, our so-called education minister, one was a principal from Rangitoto, and I think they actually spoke to the AOG principal as well.
Oh, okay.
So it gives you some sort of idea who made up the panel to probably basically discredit NCEA.
And is it fair to me, because the whole idea of NCEA was to lift the bottom up, whereas we're going with the backwards abolishment, we're going to lift the top up, and we don't really give a stuff about the bottom.
We're just following the current trend. We're going backwards.
Yeah, we're doing it. Yeah,
yeah, yeah.
So that's the tragedy. Who's gonna struggle under the new system?
There's gonna be a lot of kids who will be less
And NCEA wasn't perfect by any means,
Yeah.
But it was a broad church, and it was trying to make sure that people disadvantaged, et cetera, both in privilege, education, access, the whole lot.
Mm.
It was actually trying to make sure we can help them as well.
So,
but the elites went, oh, no, we don't want that. We not, don't want that. We want that, but actually we want to encourage and push the higher performing students, which also happened to be, surprise, surprise, from middle class white elite families. You know,
there's a surprise.
Yeah. Although it's a generalisation, could be elites from other cultures as well.
So those who are less fortunate, shall we say, are they doomed to do sort of menial occupations?
Well, I think so. I'm not sure. What do you think, Craig?
I suspect so.
Yeah.
And of course, they'd be the most vulnerable when it came to changes in employment, i.e., technology. Yeah. They will be the first to feel the crunch. Be discarded. Yeah.
Well, they've still struggled under NCCA, to be fair.
But it's going to be even worse.
Yeah.
Because you just have to go back to the old English way of education. We're talking about 19th century Tom Brown school day stuff.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Like the elites would go to public school. Harrow. Eton, rugby. Yeah,
just for the listeners, public schools in the UK are private
schools.
It's a bit confusing.
That's those sorts of school where you have the likelihood of going into the army, you might be going into the mission, into the church, you might be going into politics or whatever, or public service.
Yeah.
And your schooling would determine how successful you were in that endeavour.
Yeah.
Which to a certain extent happens here as well.
That's what happens.
If you went to the right school, your chances of going where you wanted to go were markedly improved.
Yeah, you know, you go,
connections. It's all about connections.
Yeah, so if you school clubs.
If you go to AOG or Auckland, or to Rangitoto, or New Plymouth Boys High, or Nelson Boys High, King's College, and you're going to go on.
Southall, and what's the other one next to it? St Paul's Collegiate.
Yeah, those are the.
There's plenty of private schools.
Private schools, but if you go to some lower decile school, you may be one of the lucky students to get into that area. More than likely, you'll be a menial type person.
Well, more
technical, like
a menial.
Yeah, it could be menial too.
Chippy and plumber, and not there's anything wrong with being a chippy or a plumber, but
they are.
But they wouldn't be deemed academically
sound.
And let's face it, there's plenty of bright kids that go to public schools, etc. But I say there's plenty of average kids go to private schools just by the position of their wealth, of their family's wealth.
You'll get a lucky student who'll get and we're talking about England of days gone by, who could go to these exclusive type schools.
And sometimes
under a scholarship.
Even his generations from the same family would go to those schools.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, and you see that we're drifting around a bit, but you see that, you know, you can, if you're good at sport or et cetera, you mightn't be very academic at all, but if you're big enough for the first 15 or the cricket team or something else, or the swimming team, you've been well known to be given a scholarship to get you on board. To join access to the club, so to speak.
Yeah, certain schools, what we call it, it's a crude term, headhunt students, bright students, talented sporting students to go to that school.
We do it for rugby, the All Blacks do it.
But they're not the only guilty of that.
So it's interesting. But I say, this article basically says just that the demise has been undermined by private options.
It must be disheartening for those teachers who work in those lower decile schools who are not going to get this sort of largesse. It must make them feel that this is going to be a struggle to try and get these students, lift them up out of the...
it'd be interesting how it unfolds, of course.
Once that's out in the public, the idea of better schools than those schools...
Well, it's already there,
and it's
certainly will exasperate it.
And if you're a privileged person living in a less desirable area, and your child goes to a less desirable school, you will want to move into those more privileged areas.
Well,
that pushes more people out.
That's been going on for quite a while. Postal ballot type thing. They'll move into an area.
Well, they do,
just to get the kid into a particular school.
And especially in South Auckland, there was sort of this. The better off known as like the Brown Flight for people who were trying to get the kids in better education options, etc., would take them over to the other side of town, sort of thing.
It's an ugly thing, though.
Yeah, it sounds very ugly.
Well, it's critical. Let's face it. It's critical because if you don't, if you can't read and write, and you can't, you know, those things decide what how you live in your future. Quite often, sure.
And
children, let's face it. If you happen to be just dumb, but you belong to a dairy farmer's family, you're going to be all right. But if you happen to be dumb and you belong in a poor family, your life is going to be a struggle all the way through.
And then
chances are,
and then generations afterwards, it's just
You should read the Mark Mitchell example. Because he was the grandson of Frank Gill. And I think there must be a privileged family, but I think academically he wasn't all that bright.
No, but if there was privilege there, it doesn't matter.
Yeah, that's the example. Yeah.
So, and I say, and vice versa for kids that are clever, and someone is really clever that is from a lower economic family, etc., probably has a chance of getting through if the teachers or someone pick them up.
And there'll be scholarships available.
If you're an average student and you're in from a privileged area and family, etc., you'll do far better in life just by circumstances of your birth. Whereas you won't if mum and dad are struggling or whatever.
What I don't like about there must have been a panel appointed to just go through this, and who was actually on the panel makes me.
Well, she claimed that Labor was invited to participate.
I'm talking about principles.
Right.
Yeah. And what we learnt was, and it came from that article, and it was one of the panel members was the principal of Rangitoto College. And lo and behold, Rangitoto College was Stanford's old college, and lo and behold, her children currently go there.
Yeah.
So it kind of smells of a conflict of interest.
And
you need to know who made up that panel to discuss this. Were they a mixture of schools, or were they more likely to be shoulder tapped?
That's the impression you get, isn't it?
But that one example, and I think the good on the reporter to saying, well, this sounds like a conflict of interest, and she said, no.
I think the lady doth protest too much.
Because she also indulged in a little bit of conflict of interest before, when she appointed her mentor Murray McCulley to do that review into school buildings.
Okay. So there's a current theme.
Yes, and it carries on into the fisheries. I think we were talking about that.
It's a club, probably.
To get is this view of changing it a independent view? Or a,
it's still only, it's not law yet. It's still up for submissions, etc. Yeah, which is good to see.
I think the submission period is only 6 weeks, apparently.
Yeah, not that long.
And there were concerns from Toreo or bilingual schools that there's just not enough time.
I think that in the same article, she said that she put the feelers out towards Labor to see if they would participate, and she claimed that they weren't interested.
I think that's the way it's sort of spelled out in the news yesterday.
Well, let's face it, it goes back, and I know harp on, and I know I live in dream world most of the time, but it'd be nice that things like education and housing and health, we did a far more bipartisan stuff. What's good for, and I really, it gets up my nose when people say, I just want about my grandchildren. What about everybody's grandchildren?
Yeah, everybody needs a fair chance in life.
Because, you know, you hear it amongst the Tories, especially, I've got enough money for my grandchild to get a house, all this sort of stuff goes on. What about everyone's grandchild getting a house, somewhere to live?
A decent job.
I know it sounds like socialism, but, we've got to start thinking not just about Sir Plotnikoff's grandchild, but actually Marty and Mary's grandchildren.
Exactly right. Otherwise, well, you get the system of people being left behind.
Well, and the danger I see of this NCCA thing, when you think about it, it weakens the state, which there's people, there's enemies of what I call enemies of the state. They want minimal government, etc. and then they use the thing, oh, well, you know, we can do better this way, and that creeps into privatisation of hospitals, you know, water services, etc. Oh, let's, you know, for some reason the council can't do a good job, but we'll let a private firm do it and that'll be better.
Yeah,
you know, they're, it's a weakening of the whole idea of collective responsibility.
A
village raises a child, not just a village. Some people in the village raise some children.
That's good analogy. But speaking, we can just speak about conflict of interest, and it was to do with the fishery thing. About the cameras on the ship, on the boats. And basically, nothing to see here. That's the impression I got from Shane Jones.
It's what?
Nothing to see here. We can self-regulate according to the, I think it was a Sea Lords person.
Self-regulate.
So,
okay. Self-manage.
It should ring alarm bells.
But does Jones has links to the fishing industry, so we can see, we can spell yet again, conflict of interest.
I used to say to you, I could self-manage how much beer I had when I went out.
Yes, I know how much I could take.
It's a pretty dangerous
slope. I'm not sure if it's Shane Jones, but something to do with a few weeks back, we talked about how the supermarkets were going to self-regulate on...
It was building,
food,
wasn't it?
Food production places, like meatworks or... Yeah. They would self-regulate.
Oh, and same with the building industry.
Self-regulate. It should ring alarm bells.
But the two major groups who are concerned about what's going on with the fisheries are Saturday anglers, I call them. And environmentalists.
Yeah.
Because they'll just swoop up everything.
Oh, yeah.
It doesn't care if it's an endangered species or not.
You already get in Auckland, you get already, with its population, the pressure, even by Saturday fishermen or mum and dad fishermen in the family, the pressure on that fishery is enormous. Forget commercial fishing.
Yeah, we know that.
You get a million people living in a city and a lot of them want to go, if some of them want to go fishing, it's a huge demand. You take five fish out by 100,000 people.
I'm surprised you catch anything.
You might catch a plastic bag.
Or something else. Nasty disease. It just seems incredible.
It's that attack on the state. Well, we can rely on the farmer not to put his dairy discharge what's that guy who does the radio thing, Mike Hosking, to drive at a fair speed because he's a responsible driver. You know, we have actually speed limits.
For a reason.
You know, we have rules for reasons.
Because people can't be trusted.
And you always should actually review them occasionally. I'm not against that to see if, A, technology and time and modernisation has changed. You know, we can go faster than a horse and cart now.
I know Hosking wants. He wants that scene from the Tale of Two Cities where Mark was the one who runs down that child with his carriage at breakneck speed. That's what he wants.
I think he lives somewhere where there's a holiday highway that was built towards posh area.
Matakara.
Self-creation just smacks of corruption or potential for corruption.
It's potential corruption.
It's like you saying to me,
we're the elites, we know best, just do as you're told. They're just greedy so-and-sos.
They are feeding the greed-based economy. That's what the whole fishery thing.
Well, the minimisation of the state, and I harp on about a lot, but actually, the wealthy can they think they can do without the state, even though they're quite happy to use our roads and our airports and everything else that we heavily subsidise. The children get heavily subsidised at universities, all that. But the poorer you are, the more you need the state.
Another thing that's occurred to me about the fisheries. What about health and safety?
There could be
no cameras.
Nothing to see here.
Mm. No cameras. I mean, an awful lot could happen. Mishaps, accidents, even deaths. And then all of a sudden, there's no information.
Early times, of course, you know, if you're working in the pit or wherever else, you know, there was deaths everywhere.
Blame the victim.
They're just a menial worker.
Yeah.
That's the mentality.
Yeah.
So it doesn't bode well.
No, it smell, I smell a rat. Yeah, I think they wanted to self-regulate those those cameras. So,
well, this is Seymour too, and he's into this deregulation.
Nonsense. Well, it's their mentor, isn't it? You know, minimal state. This is Trump.
No, they can be trusted. No, they can't be trusted.
No,
but they want the state to protect their beach house.
Yes,
i.e. police.
The roads.
They want the road to the beach house built.
Yeah.
They want, you know, the potholes on the road to the other beach house to be kept up to date.
Yeah,
but never mind, Benny and Maddie live in a back street somewhere.
No.
They can have a pothole for, you know, as many years as it takes because it's not on the way to anywhere, you know?
Exactly. Yeah, but you have something there interesting there, Mick, about, and it's to do with a so-called mayoral candidate.
Yeah, local. This is in Thursday's Times, and it seems that last year, this is a disagreement. Sorry, I'll start beginning. Hamilton mayoral race is heating up as leading candidates Sarah Thompson and Tim McAdoo clash over who said what and who voted for what when it came to cuts to community services such as libraries and CitySafe. And at the heart of this disagreement is a vote on June the 4th of last year. McAdoo voted in support of an amendment that proposed closing the, I'm not how you pronounce this, A-U-A-H-A, Awaha, was that how you pronounce it? A-U-A-H-A?
Awaha.
Makerspace.
Yeah.
And that was a saving of $125,000. Cutting CitySafe patrols, that was going to save $331,000. Reducing service levels for gully restoration, parks, treescapes, community development. The amendment also included additional cost-saving options, such as reducing library open hours. That the motion, and the motion was voted down. But despite voting in favour, this is McAdoo, despite voting in favour of the broader amendment, McAdoo said his intention was to find efficiencies, not attack valued services. My recollection of the discussions is we had during the long-term plan last year is that we voted specifically not to close any libraries. I would not vote to close a library, but Sarah Thompson caught him out because it's recorded. He did vote. He voted for the amendment.
Yeah.
So you're saying I didn't want to close libraries, but you want to have a look at it. But if you're going to look at it, don't you look at something because you might want to change it?
And I have to declare my slight conflict of interest because one of my children worked for the city council in the libraries.
Yeah.
But she certainly, that's a credit to her. She didn't just go, when he was saying, I don't remember saying it sort of thing. She actually had the, yes, she did, you voted for that amendment on the state. So that good work, Sarah Thompson.
And she needs to
that's work. That's doing your prep. That's doing
your homework.
McAdoo had asked staff whether a reduction in hours might be preferable to closing the library. It said it was literally just a question to explore. Just a question to explore the options. I don't trust this guy.
Yeah, well, you see his billboards around now. I see there's a couple now out our way. About cutting costs and cutting...
Yeah, well, not just him, to be fair.
There's an ACT-backed candidate in this area saying the same thing. What they call themselves, ratepayers, whatever.
It's a standard thing. And
it resonates.
As a socialist, I don't want waste in any government department because I want efficient government departments, efficient local government. I want efficient collective fiscally responsible services. But the danger is...
His motive, his reasons behind it.
So I don't want waste either, but I don't want it used as the excuse to get rid of things just because they don't use it.
And that's why I suspect that Mr. McIndoe's up to...
Well, it's not just him, I think. Well,
there's
others. You know,
there'll be a few of them. Know? Yeah, Taylor's another one, I suspect.
Yeah.
Smell a rat.
Yes. Yeah, so good on her for pointing that out to him. And he had the John Keyes effect. He had the momentary lapse of memory.
I don't recall or something.
That's all right, Mr. Yeah, Mayor. It's recorded.
She got him. She smacked his bottom.
Literally.
Came a bloody nose.
Oh, that's probably good. Spanking.
I don't know. so good. I mean, that sort of exchange of ideas and opinions and policy might galvanise some more interest.
Well,
you'd hope so.
Well, I actually, forget the politics of it, just the fact that she'd done the homework and looked up the date, looked up how he voted, etc. That impresses me. Because that's not just ruling from a throne. That's actually, okay, I'll look it up. I'll do some homework about this before I open my mouth.
You must have had an inkling this was going to come up.
Well, so maybe. I don't know.
And but did some research.
Predator.
Yeah, good on it.
And that's what I say.
That's
you don't want lazy mayors. You want people that are prepared to do some work, look up the facts.
Yeah, most definitely.
Yeah. So votes are recorded.
Yeah. And you think as a politician you would have recognised, you would have remembered that, surely.
Neil Key got away with it for a long time. You know. Oh, I just convenient can't recall, I don't remember. Yeah.
Very convenient.
Yeah.
And I think what I was, petrol tax ditch set to make way for user pay revolution. This is Mr. Bishop.
Yeah.
And phasing out of petrol taxes in favour of a new road user charge scheme that scraps the paper labels on cars and modernises the tax scheme in a world of electric and hybrid cars, blah, blah, blah. Essentially, the government will be abolishing petrol tax. People will pay for the roads based on how much they use them. And if we get this right, he says, and this is what he shoots himself in the foot, he says, if we get this right, which does suggest that he has some doubt, it's an unfortunate turn of phrase. If you get this, people were based on their vehicle type, the distance travelled, the location, and time of use. And I was talking to Fred about this, and I'm thinking, would I be right in thinking that if you're in a business where you're like a contractor for a building site and you're using your vehicle for business purposes, would you be able to claim some of that surcharge back as a business expense?
Absolutely.
And let me guess, who wouldn't be able to claim them?
Yeah, absolutely.
The same people.
Yeah.
And the annoying thing is, this system is going to be using privatised collection firms.
Yeah.
It just smacks of more of the same. Let's kick them in the goolies.
I bet you there's a user pays part of it.
Yep.
What about administrative costs for these private outfits?
Yeah. Yes,
exactly. It sort of accumulates, isn't it?
Yeah. But I do agree that the bottom line is that there's, with electric vehicles, etc., they use the road as well. Anyone that uses the road.
Hence the road tax, that's what I thought.
But how to get a general taxation for it, rather than single people out?
Because you have petrol tax and you have diesel tax and road tax, don't you?
Yeah.
And people would think, oh, road tax, therefore my tax is going towards the road.
Yeah.
But it doesn't necessarily work out that way, does it? It
just
goes in the general pool. Mind you, even the fuel tax and the road isn't enough to cover the repairs on the road. They still need to pull the money out of the general fund to build their roads to their batches, that sort of thing, you know?
Yeah, true.
But the same thing.
But at the moment you've got to privatise, it doesn't necessarily mean it's going to be more efficient. It means someone somewhere is going to make a lot of money out of this.
Well, and it's like, you know, if you don't have a car, you don't have a car, but you still contribute for your taxes to the general good of... Because if you need an ambulance, it's got to go on a road. Yeah. So the idea, great, you don't drive, so you guys contribute to it in a general taxation. Yeah. That, to me, is how things should be looked at. Okay, for the common good.
Yeah.
For the common good, do we need a road, a nice road to Mike Hoskins' beach house? Do we, you know, sort of thing. We should have roads everywhere to it, you know, that we all pay for, you know?
Yeah. What about if you're doing away with that, what about, are they going to need all bicyclists who use the road?
Is it motorised vehicles? Or is it pedal power exempt from that? I don't know, but...
We haven't heard that one yet.
I suppose you might have a point there, Craig, because they have cycle lanes now on some of these roads. That has to be paid for. That's all marked out.
Which is the danger of privatisation. We start which group's got to pay for what?
I don't want it. They should pay. And then have a big barney over who's going to pay not.
And then you would have a fair claim and saying, well, actually, I don't want to pay anything because I don't have a car.
Yes. Then when you talk about cycle lanes...
I have no say in it. It comes out of my taxes and just goes in the general pool.
Yeah.
Then you talk about with cycleways and you talk about you bring idiots like this into play. You say they want to cut costs as well. Yes.
Well, that's the danger. Yeah. And go back to what I said before.
Yeah.
Just having to be some poorer area, they don't get their roads updated
or the
as fast as
fixed up.
Et cetera.
Well, like I said before, I noticed around town it's looking rather tatty.
Even Sarah Thompson said that we need to spend more on keeping our maintenance up to date, which I quite agree. No
point having it's all expensive, though. It's all
yeah, but no point having a big flash building if you
if it's going to turn weeds, tumbleweed going down the street
and rubbish and some
all
of
that stuff. The other thing, eh? It's looking really tatty. Yeah, garbage floating.
And winter's time is a hard time, but how you make it smart is the toilets are clean, the rubbish isn't on the side of the road.
Well, he's looking, the Macado's looking at cutting corners on.
The right wingers are.
Yeah, because he lives in an area that is obviously
he lives in an affluent,
well maintained.
He lives in an affluent area. Oh, no, affluent area.
Something else caught me. Oh, government addresses, claiming they're going to address homeless spike. This is Bishop, Mr. Bishop again, hopes to tweak emergency housing policy. Housing Minister says he's open, albeit reluctantly, to changing the government's emergency housing policy to confront a rise in the number of people rough sleeping. This follows outreach providers report a 90% increase in homelessness in Auckland. So this is on, this was on Monday this week.
Yeah.
He was speaking on TVNZ's Q&A, said he was open to altering the government's rules but is adamantly against a large-scale use of emergency housing. So how's he going to fix the problem without some form of emergency housing?
I don't think it doesn't make sense.
Let's face it, they probably don't care that much as long as it doesn't make the headlines.
He doesn't really care. None of them do.
So they can turn around and they go, oh, look how much we're not spending on emergency housing now.
But they've also doctored the figures. They've suppressed some of the figures, like the numbers going up.
Yeah. Well, we're only just finding out now how many people are now back on the street.
And we weren't surprised that they were going up.
No.
But they thought they could cover up the numbers and people...
Well, initially they said, oh, we don't know where they've gone, but now...
Yes, you do. You know exactly where they've gone, and they're making more people jump more hurdles to get into whatever emergency housing is available.
Yeah.
So you've got kids, young kids with their mothers sleeping in a car. I mean,
well, that's what this lady from Kaitaia said, you know, when you've got sort of young children growing up in a car park.
It's just...
How's that going to give them a stable future?
I was talking to our mutual friend Catherine that said that one guy who's diabetic, he was declined emergency housing because it was his fault that he had diabetes.
Well, was it type 2 or type 1?
Well, I can't remember if it is whether his diet caused the diabetes.
Or whether genetics then.
Or genetics. I've got no idea. She wasn't sure. But I thought, this is blame the victim.
Yeah, that seems really outrageous, isn't it?
It's cruel, actually.
Who reported that? Is it sort of?
I think it's one. I think Catherine. I think it was mentioned in one of the papers. But,
okay.
I tried to find. I couldn't find it. But I thought that's outrageous.
It does seem outrageous. Yeah.
But there has been elements of that thinking creeping in that some people who aren't eligible for emergency housing is due to their own fault because
the poor.
You contributed to your own situation.
Yeah, you're poor, it's your fault, enough. So why are we helping you?
So it's the current trend of blame the victim.
Yeah.
Mm. This article title, Government Addresses Homeless Spike...
is misleading.
They haven't.
No, they haven't.
No, it's a misleading article.
And the paper should be caught up about that, because that's a misleading article.
Yeah, but people say,
What they mean by addressing it is that they're going to discuss it.
Yeah.
And not do anything about it.
Ignore it.
Yes.
Yeah. That's the way, yeah.
Because addresses means they've dealt with it, doesn't it?
We've discussed it, therefore we've dealt with it.
Which is a false headline.
Yeah, I know. It's very misleading.
So refer you back to your what you brought up last week, Mick, the National Homelessness Data Project.
Mm.
And they were saying, as you say, I'll just repeat.
The Salvation Army and other organisations.
Homelessness
is on the rise.
On the increase across all communities.
Yeah. Mm. Some more than others, probably.
Some, I suspect, Major cities would be where most of it would be.
The urban ones would be really bad, eh?
And see, I see where this person sitting out, this picture's taken out of in front of T2.
Yeah.
And T2's, we purchase T2T. From time to time, it's not exactly cheap. So this is a high end stuff, high end place. So this wouldn't look good if you say a high end business.
He's not homeless as such. He's big.
No. I'm not saying. Probably. I think he is.
Yeah.
But outside, the people who own these sorts of businesses would have the ear of the government because they're privileged.
Yeah.
And they're moaning in the government's ear. They would have to act on it. But if it was a outside of business in a low end of town. Nah, we'll just ignore it.
Yeah. And I'm afraid the bad news continues because I can kind of segue from that. For again, on Monday, no surprises, unemployment tipped to sit at about 5.3%.
Yeah, that's not good at all.
So amongst all those figures of people who haven't got a home, you've got people who are struggling to find a job.
And it's, I think it's 13% amongst young people.
Yeah.
Which is the double of 13% of young people. They actually, some of them will pack up and go over to Aussie.
That's come up before, they'd rather go to Aussie.
Yeah, because Aussie's still got a high unemployment, it's 4%. If you're going to be poor on a small job, etc., you know, a low-paying job, you're probably better off in Aussie than you are here.
I reckon it's mostly outside of the farming sector, that's where the most problems are. The farming community is doing very nicely at the moment.
Farmers are doing wonderful. We know, $10 bucks for a pound of butter.
Revelation last Friday that New Zealand's exporters will face higher tariffs because of Trump and all that sort of stuff than Australian and British exporters when selling into the United States. Is it expected that... So all those things are going to start to bite soon.
Unemployment.
And plus the cost will go up to those people, those same goods.
Yeah, so you say unemployment's higher among...
outside the farming community. That's how it reads. Farming sector.
Yeah.
And the economists, all five banks are forecasting Stats New Zealand will report on Wednesday, which has just gone, that the employment will increase to 5.3 in 3 months.
What does it say the percentages amongst the young were?
I read it this morning. It was 12.9% or something.
Didn't quite say
in there. But it was.
Another one was rural communities to question proposed police cuts.
Oh, yeah.
Police and politicians could expect a boisterous response. This was in Monday's Herald. Police and politicians can expect a boisterous response if they front the community meeting next week to discuss the proposed axing of local police officers in rural Canterbury. It is understood the proposal could decrease police numbers in parts of rural North Canterbury and Selwyn, making way for increased centralised resources in more popularised parts of both districts. So they've just joined Hamilton and the Waikato. Mm. We've gone to the centralised police system.
Yeah.
Which means there's a huge gap between ringing 911
and when someone arrives.
And when someone can respond.
Yeah.
But I think the areas you're talking about have a lot of privilege in them, don't you?
Oh, yeah.
But it says police confirmed it will conduct a 2-week consultation, on the proposed structure change which began on July 30th.
Mm.
North Canterbury Federated Farmers President Bex Green said, "We're pretty upset with the proposal, especially in Culverden, with the loss of the two police officers here." Green said the first public meeting is scheduled for Wednesday evening in Calverton. And the police say, "We need a district structure that is fit for purpose and supports us to achieve our goals now and in the future," which is blah, blah, blah.
Culverton, from my recollection,
it'd be a farming service town.
It'd be a blue area. Mm. And of course they would moan.
Yeah. But to be fair,
I would moan if I was living in a stick where I suddenly lose our local cops.
And shouldn't we put a more socialist perspective on it? Sorry. But at the end of the day, the policeman, it's not just about crime.
No.
The policeman's also there. We have natural emergency death. Someone dies at home, who gets rung up? The policeman.
Yeah.
We have traffic, roads, etc. else. They can do school visits, you know. The thing is, to me, it's like the police have a job to do.
But there's also
in those rural areas, they're part of the community.
That means just gives a green light to any potential criminals. Yeah. They've lost their local cops.
Yeah.
I've got 20 minutes to do it and scarper.
Yeah.
Because response time.
Yeah.
But there could be a rule of...
Let's protect ourselves from that bad family down there because it could
have repercussions. And this just flies in the face of them supposedly recruiting 500 police officers per year.
Well, and this goes back. The bigger picture goes back to we have inequality.
Mm.
We have poverty, we have rise in unemployment, etc.
Yeah.
Demands on our policing, sadly, go through the roof. You know.
It's even worse now because they lost their support staff.
Yeah.
They've got to do more record keeping and
have to write it down or whatever. Yeah, you know. So, the bigger picture is that it undermines everything gets undermined.
It says to me that things starting to collapse.
Yeah.
It's unsustainable.
Yeah. And then, of course,
we end up with little gated communities with private police forces all geared up with.
Yep.
Judge Dredd sort of.
Judge Dredd thing, yeah. And if you're in the wilderness, in other words, a low socioeconomic area, it's
Juggle.
Yeah, they'll occasionally go in for a raid and then you won't see them again. Yeah. Like you see in America, they have big armoured cars actually, and.
But the way they're organised, the system's actually crumbling. It's not.
Yeah, it's because money's been taken out.
Yeah. The resources, the taxes
have been cut.
Yeah.
Yes. Personnel have been reduced.
So why don't you just have a fairer tax system that everyone gets...
You're really making a song and dance about this fair...
I'm sorry.
Socialist approach.
The sun is shining, and so I'm trying to do the half glass full. Why don't we just have a fair taxation system and those people that don't pay much tax and earn good money...
There'll be people screaming, heretic.
Oh, yeah.
Socialist, communist, and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah. Boon him at the state.
So why don't we, you know, if we had a fair taxation system...
talking common sense, Fred.
Sorry, I know.
But you're talking 1950s when...
Yeah.
The elites had a reason for doing all those things they did, which are now nicking back off it.
Yeah, that's true. Okay, I'll shut up.
Well, speaking of fair tax, Labor did bring that up this week. When they should have brought it up before.
Yeah.
Now, Fred and I were talking about this yesterday because Simon Wilson's done another big article. It's huge. This was in Wednesday's Nationals Deepening Woes, 4 Theories, 1 Prediction. And Mr. Wilson predicts, the first one, he says that perhaps Luxon is boosting Labour's and suppressing support for National, while Te Pāti Māori, TPM, is boosting the National and suppressing Labour. He thinks that, Luxon's performance could backfire and it could be a godsend for Labour. That's just kind of rhetorical. But theory two is National believes things will be better next year. Anything's possible, I guess, but the public is sceptical. Respondents in the most recent ANZ Roy Morgan survey said they thought inflation would rise above 5% sometime next year, while wages will grow at only half that rate.
Yes, eight.
Number three was they're looking after their mates. I kind of go along with that.
I think that's more to the point. That's more of the truth.
Government-appointed board members are getting a pay rise of up to 80%.
Yeah. For doing what?
Exactly.
Sitting on their jacksies.
But then the rest of us, no, you're living beyond your means, you've got to tighten your belt.
So
interest deductibility for landlords will cost the country $2.9 billion over 4 years. Largely private early childhood education sector has been protected. Importers of petrol-powered vehicles are back in favour. And it goes on and on, the fossil fuel companies. Theory four, they don't know what to do. I like this one. They don't know what to do. They don't know how to decouple economic plans from the property market, climate plans from the cows and the cars, or trade from international relations. And it goes on and on and on. So I reckon people, if interested, people should go on the online version and look at Wednesday's Simon Wilson's article.
It's a massive article.
I can't go through the whole thing because it'd take too long.
Yeah.
But it's interesting, it's sort of tongue in cheek. I just like number four. They don't know what they're doing.
I think as an option.
There's two that's close to the mark there, Mick, I think. One is they're looking after their mates.
Yeah. And they don't know what they're doing.
I think even what I call middle National Party voters are starting to realise that they're not in the looking after their mates group, club. So they're starting to go, hang on a minute, what about us?
But they haven't really seen the light.
They haven't seen the light.
They're feeling the pressure.
But they're just starting to think,
They haven't become socialists. They've just been thinking, this is out of my pocket.
We could lose our seat.
This isn't...
I need your support, even though I've been kicking in the ghoulies all year round. You need to back me up because I'm losing money.
Yeah, so they've got a few problems, all right, because they lose that middle... That what I call that National Party voter who isn't wealthy, and there's plenty of them, but sort of stick to it because of the status quo and they start to feel unsettled.
Seymour and Peters don't give a damn about making Lux look like a chump.
Yeah.
They're pushing their own agendas.
Of course they are.
But Lux has proved, I think he's one of the ones that put it on the worst leaders we've ever had.
Well, he's proved, let's face it, being a chief executive
is not the same as being prime minister.
No, and you, and let's face it, Key got away with it because of the times, etc. But even Key would get it, wouldn't get away with it now.
No, and even Key was telling this same guy not to, to hold back on the tax cuts.
Yeah.
So he saw the writing on the wall, but this guy didn't. He's gone from one faux pas to another ever since he's been in office.
And I think it was one of my older relations told me that rich or poor, we can all only eat one loaf of bread a day.
Yeah,
and that's the trouble. You give tax cuts to the wealthy, where do they go? That that article that I was vomiting on in the Herald this morning over all these Kiwis in their second houses in France, and well, not just second houses, no doubt, but, you know, and I say, so you're giving money to... you're
people
giving,
who don't need it.
Who don't need it.
Yeah. Well, they want it.
Benny and Mary, when they get an extra $20 from the, on their benefit, they go down and pay off a debt or buy some
buy
food.
Buy some food, yeah.
Or pay the land. The land or grabs or it a few years about it.
Grabs it.
Yeah. Only once a year now, of course, but
A look of a man heading towards the night cart.
Yeah.
Oh, he'll get a night off.
Oh, he'll get a gone way.
For disservices to the country.
Oh, just to put a dampener on it. I'll go off my socialist cause. and we're my, you know.
Are we not making you feel uncomfortable? Are we?
No.
We never have.
That's all right. But I think there's also a bit of deliberateness that how terrible things are now, because all the Nats need is for things to get the figures out and a few positive articles closer to the election. And the public, sadly, the voting publics will go, oh, yeah, it was better than it was last year. I'll give them the tick.
We're talking about it. It's just
that's the danger.
Because people are too stupid.
They won't remember. They won't go, well, last year you put us all through this. They'll go, oh, yeah, I suppose it is a bit better than it was.
Yeah, but it's only a bit better for a little while, and then I'll nick it back off you.
Oh, of course. And some things are instrumental. Yeah. They won't be able to get better.
No.
You know, so...
Well, things like health, education, all this, you know.
Yeah, because you see the tax examples of the United States, for the privileged look after themselves, but a lot of areas of the United States are poverty.
Oh, absolutely,
sheer poverty, and that's just through a lack of
medical black holes.
Yeah, just
and they're not just black people; they are white people as well.
It's across the board. It's really where you don't pay your taxes. This is the system that you get.
You
get the elites looking after themselves in their little strongholds, like Mar-a-Lago, for example.
Yep.
While you have...
Well, I've got it here in New Zealand. Yeah.
While you have these black areas, like in the Appalachians and places like that, where it's dire poverty. Yeah,
well, they recently had a documentary about this very thing on Al Jazeera, talking about this female GP in an area. It was huge.
Yeah.
The hospital had been closed down because of lack of money, and she's the only medical person, and the nearest hospital was something like 400 kilometres away.
Yeah. Jeez, yeah. That's what they were talking about.
The chances of surviving an emergency situation are pretty low.
That's what they were exactly talking about with the horrible, ugly bill. These public hospitals in these rural areas...
They've been run down or closed.
...will be closed, and the poor people will have to travel, as you say, 400-plus miles to the nearest health facility.
Goes back. I'll go back to my socialist hat. Yeah. That's why we need to care for everyone in it.
In a community, community.
And it did work, because just after the Second World War, we had community hospitals and community schools.
Absolutely.
And there was a largesse, there was the political will.
Benny needs a house, get him a house.
Get him a house. Yep. Or we need a new road, get him a new road or whatever.
That's
all being clawed back. Yeah.
Because, go back to my argument, I think they didn't just do it out of largesse.
Well, no, it wasn't. It was the political...
They did it because they were scared that would all suddenly vote communist or Russia, you know, big bad Russia. Reds under the bed. Remember that, you know?
It was politically motivated, but we benefited.
Now there's no opposition, so it's like...
We just claw it all back.
Oh, well, we can do what we like,
or
really.
Or even worse, we'll give ourselves social security and the rest of you can go...
Yeah, socialism for the rich.
Trump's mantra.
Well, it's
Well, Lux has basically given us the middle finger ever since he's been in.
He's also trying to juggle his supporters, because that support base also are very sympathetic to ACT.
He's not doing a very good job.
No, but I say that he knows his national voters have got a problem with race. They have got a problem with
wealth distribution.
They've got lots of problems.
Yeah, so ACT's quite attractive to them. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
You know?
Oh, yeah.
I know a lot of National Party voters. Don't hurt me now. But, you know, family members, et cetera. ACT's all quite support. You know, they're all quite fond of ACT, you know?
Yeah. Yes. Mm. We know what they are. Yes. Yeah, but there was an RNZ or Radio New Zealand article on Facebook this morning. Mm-hmm. It was Chloe Swarbrick being approached by members of the National Party.
Yep.
Concerned about, certain members, certain MPs, concerned about their voting base because people are concerned about Gaza.
Yeah. That's good. Yeah. There's definitely been a bit of a sea change.
So these electorate have got approached their MPs because they're worried, because they're concerned about Gaza.
They're concerned about what's going on in the starvation.
Well, there's been a major campaign by PSNA, the Palestine Solidarity Network, about people contacting their MPs and people of influence, etc.
Well, it's good.
So, yeah.
Well, good.
Yeah.
Well, I hope the momentum picks up.
Yeah.
And hope our government gets some guts and...
Yeah, but they
instead of talking about do something.
Well, these MPs sounds like they're in their sort of private conversations with opposition, with that particular opposition, is that their leadership concerns and their support of
there's Zion a very State. So it's the very embryonic version of a political issue.
The Radio New Zealand today, and I posted on Facebook too, you can reference that, and someone has, they've printed it, and gone, New Zealand might be edging to a different stance, you know, rather than it's tumbleweed, complicit, let's not go there thing. So that's interesting. So
the momentum picks
and,
up.
And just on that, just to give a shout out to the people of mainly Sydney, but others might have come from further afield. The Harbour Bridge, on a wet, awful day in Sydney.
Incredible.
And the police sort of said, there was 90,000 there who walked over the Harbour Bridge. But Independence have said there's probably about 300,000.
Yeah.
And it was a wet day, and it would have been hard because of umbrellas, but what a credit. That shows you just how much feeling there has developed what Israel's doing.
The Labour government did everything possible to stop it. Went through Supreme Court.
Yeah, they tried. The cops tried. Everyone tried to stop it and play it down, and even the reporting by a lot of the conservative thing was there weren't many there. But you could tell, you can't hide pictures.
No, you can't. No.
And so
I think the same weekend there was ones in Manchester.
Oh, they're around the world.
Paris, New York,
and in New Zealand, they're happening all the time. Yeah.
Good on them, eh?
Yeah.
I saw the pictures of Sydney. Well, they looked miserable as hell.
And Aussie's more Americanized than we are. You know, so they're a bit into the military. They love playing uniforms and war. You know, but that just shows you that even the Aussies, there's a big groundswell that this is wrong. Mm. This is reprehensible.
Pictures say a lot.
Yeah. Well, that way you can get through it. You know, when you say, we had that, you see a picture, unless someone's AI and all this extra crowd.
We talked about it too. The thing about the same march was, I think Julius Assange was at the front of the march.
We saw that one there,
And right at that, the media took a picture of Julius Assange and other people at the front. And at the back, several metres back, was a huge picture of the Ayatollah. And the inference was that they were supporting...
Oh, this is the old anti-Persian...
Iranian...
Yeah.
The inference was, Julian Assange and his associates support Iran.
Yeah.
But it wasn't. It was complete BS.
But they grab things. And that's how... unfortunately, how sound bites and picture bites can work.
Unfortunately.
Good and bad, I suppose.
Good and bad. They say pictures say a thousand.
I've got a couple of that.
You go for it.
You got anything, Craig? No,
you go for it.
Yep. The Trump Putin talks in the Ukraine. be interesting. Do you realise, like, in the world last year, they spent the worldwide military expenditures that they know of was $2.7 trillion dollars.
It was pretty going up.
Well, it's gone up every year.
Yeah.
And just to get in perspective, is 1,000 million makes 1 billion. 1,000 billion makes 1 trillion.
Mm.
This is that's mind-boggling.
You imagine those arms brokers must be thinking, oh, glory days here.
Well, and obviously, commission. This before.
You imagine the commission on that.
Yeah, and you did right. The commission on every tank that gets blown up in Ukraine. Yeah. I don't think the Yanks, the wealth, the people who own the shares and all this, the military industrial shareholders, etc., they don't give a stuff if the Ukrainian gets burnt to death or a Russian gets burnt to death, as long as the tank goes up.
Can you mention that figure again?
What one do you want? 2.7 trillion.
Just 1 year.
That's 1 year.
Yeah.
Worldwide.
It's the US taxpayer. The ones who do pay tax are forking out for this lot.
Yeah, and a lot of that money is, of course, because America makes it there, stays in America.
Mm. Yeah.
But I say, it's such an industry. So you imagine, and all jokes aside, you imagine Trump and Putin. The other person in the room will be a member of the military industrial complex.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If Trump isn't already. And even Putin could be, because he'll have his own military industrial complex.
Yeah. Well,
the tank gets made, it gets paid for by taxpayers or whatever. At the end of that, you don't want a tank that's like New Zealand, just drives around Waiuru getting stuck in the mud and you keep it for 30 years.
Mm.
You send one to Ukraine and it gets blown up in a few weeks. That's gold, because they need another one. And you need another one.
Yeah, yeah.
It's just like, you know, in the tragedy of Israel, the Yanks supplied all those bombs.
It's the war that keeps on giving.
Yeah, it does keep on giving, tragically.
To the wrong people.
Yeah, just tragically. But just people need it. We need peace. It doesn't matter if you're a Ukrainian soldier or a Russian soldier.
We need peace, but there's no money in peace.
No.
But there's humanity in peace.
There's humanity.
Of course there's humanity in peace.
And yet...
But it doesn't get the same...
the same families... Yeah. Trump's already won out of this.
Construction companies, they've already...
Yeah, and Trump's really already won out of it because he's managed to encourage, including New Zealand, the whole world is now tooling up with military stuff.
Yeah.
Who sells most military stuff?
America,
etc. So he's already got commitments out of Europe to beef up military and everything else. So that's all money. So there's already money in the pot for quite some time.
Oh, yeah.
And those same families that have the shareholdings in the military complex also have it in the concrete reconstruction firms and the steel industry and anything that we've done to rebuild. So it's a win-win, as the Chinese say. You know, it's a win-win. Mm. So that was that one on that.
The 2.7 trillion.
2.7.
And going up.
The other thing is, I was about Brazil and tariffs, etc. You know, Trump's got in. All these countries are paying more on tariffs, etc. But I see price of coffee and a 50% tariff is on Brazil. And we talked a bit about how it was because Trump doesn't like the fact that Bolsonaro has been charged for inciting a riot, a bit like what Trump was, etc. And of course, but in America, coffee's gone up 25%. In a coffee shop, you go into a cafe, etc., around that, just averaging.
Yeah.
But I said, the coffee consumption hasn't yet gone down like that. People still coming in, but they're getting their coffee in a smaller cup. Hence our cafe when we go to. So there's a bit of a shrinkflation going on. So you don't need as much coffee, you've got a smaller cup.
Price is going up at the same time.
So that's 25 cents. So I just looked at that and I thought, well, how much does they have pounds, they've still got the old
imperial system, but
also contributing to the coffee prices is compounded by the problems in the supply.
And there's droughts and there's frosts and but Brazil's a major problem.
It's all about getting Bolsonaro out of the courthouse.
Well, that hasn't helped. But in America at present, I just looked it up and just Googled it, as of course you do. So it's $8.13 US dollars for 500 grams, a pound, sorry, which is 2.2, right? For ground coffee. So that's $14 New Zealand.
Yeah, one price that was $15 for the same amount.
So I looked up, what do we pay for 100 grams of coffee? And Pack and Save today was $3.54 for 100 grams. So that's multiply that, and that makes it $17.50 for basically a pound. So we're really expensive for coffee, and there's no tariffs. So, so it does affect. So I thought that was interesting that, you know, these tariffs and Trump's scotting about how much money comes in and all this. But, of course, the American people are paying the tariff.
Yes.
But some of them are too dumb to realise
that. Some American people are paying the tariff.
Yeah, well, if you're wealthy, it's like here. If you're wealthy, Mike Hosking can afford a pound of butter. He won't blink. you know. But I'd say it affects
the impact.
The impact affects the poor and the middle class.
As always.
So
That's the problem here with that.
Yeah,
cost of living crisis.
Yeah, indeed, and it's awful here. It's just the cost of living's through the roof, as Simon Wilson points out on that.
That comes down to, in areas like where people have to rely on food grants from worker income. Food parcels from social service group providers.
I had a friend during the week, and she needed some money for a bus. It's just broke, you know.
That's sad. Exactly.
And never does it lightly, you know.
Okay, that's us. You'll find us on Free FM 89.0, and look us up, Free Left Turn and Podcast.
This Free FM podcast was brought to you with support from New Zealand On Air.